Trinidad, my home country. It's the Lara Brothers with La Gaita. It's a reference to the flute. It's a style of folk music we call parang, and it is especially popular at this time of year around Christmas and the New Year. And it was introduced to Trinidad by Afro-Venezuelans. Trinidad is just off of the Venezuelan coastline. And they migrated to Trinidad and brought their wonderful music with them. And when I was growing up, at around Christmas time or so, they would sneak up to your house. Of course, you sometimes know that they're coming, but you have to pretend that you don't see them. A parang group will show up and break into song, and that would signal that you should get to the kitchen and bring out your good stuff, whatever you have in the house. And that was a way of saying we appreciate the fact that you're serenading us at this holiday time, whether it was rum or cake or whatever it is you had. And that's a wonderful memory. So I thank the Lara brothers, the last of them. Willie Lara died last year at the age of 84. But by then, the group had been in existence for about 60 years. This is Lead Stories. I'm Eutrice Lead, and we're winding down the year 2015 with your thoughts and observations about what mattered this year to you and perhaps to us all, and also to take a look at what you think we learned, what we might have accomplished, and more importantly, what still needs to be done. Lots of news in play, but it is up to you to determine where we go with the conversation today. We continue with day three of our conversation at 888-874-4888. 888-874-4888. This is an open forum, and it is designed specifically for people to trade their ideas and their thoughts and to offer up things for our consideration and to give different perspectives of what you're thinking. There is no right, there's no wrong. It's either you have an informed opinion or you don't. But it is important that we have a forum available to you to express your views, because I think that is the one thing that is so important in building community, a community of interest and a community of shared concerns. And so, as you know, I devote at least one day of our programming week to doing just this. And this week, as we close out with all days available for discussion. We start from New York with Patrika. Hello, you're on the air.
Good afternoon, Eutrice. It's wonderful to speak with you, and good afternoon to the PRN family.
Thank you, and good afternoon to you, too. Thank you so much.
It's been a while. I have been missing in action.
And tell us why you have been missing in action.
Well, Eutrice, I share with you that I am a midwife. I've been a midwife for over 30 years. And as such, I have been involved with writing for my professional organization. I think it's important, you know, when we talk about health, and especially those of us who are in academia, we tend to read, as when we're students, we tend to read the same verbiage about why there is such pathology in the African-American community. And I realized it was time that those of us in academia began to write from our perspective and infuse the literature with information that, you know, most writers of medical books and nursing books and midwifery books, they don't have that perspective. So I actually have been involved with doing considerable writing, of course, living in the library and until midnight, burning the midnight oil, making certain that the finished product was something that I could be proud of, and it is.
Oh, good for you, and
yes,
hopefully good for us.
I think it will be if it will be published. I don't think they thought that this was the article they were going to get. So even though I may be proud of it, if it doesn't get published, it's just my own accomplishment.
Well, guess what? You know, these days it is very easy to be self-published.
That is true.
I do know many small publishers who are doing excellent work, African World Info Systems being one of them, the publisher of Amos Wilson's works. They take very good care, meticulous care at preparing works so that they have a long shelf life and they do a fantastic job.
I am aware of that, but my goal was to actually get this into the medical literature because, as you know, if you don't educate students from the proper perspective, they continue to utilize the misinformation that they are taught in their education. So I was trying to actually get this in the medical literature where the audience would be wider.
Fantastic. So what are you offering for our consideration today?
Well, you know, Eutrice, I am guided by the words of Stephen Biko, who said, "The most powerful weapon in the hands of the oppressor is the minds of the oppressed." And as I look at this year, by tomorrow, almost 900 people of color, mostly men, but we're now including women in larger and larger numbers, and that seems to be forgotten. We talk about the men, but this year included significant numbers of women. And I say to myself, you know, the police are going to do what they do because they are who they are. So the question is, when do we change what we do? Mm. And I realized that the outcry, you know, the prosecutor in Cincinnati came under a lot of fire when he suggested that the Tamir Rice family was only interested in the money. And I remembered, I don't know if you remember, back in the summer of 2014, those three Israeli students who allegedly were killed by Palestinians, and the response, the swift and harsh and immediate response of the Israeli government, meaning that there will be retribution when you spill Israeli blood. And I remember back in during the Crown Heights Rebellion and the killing of Yankel Rosenbaum, and most people may not know who Yankel Rosenbaum is, so I'll explain for a few minutes. Back in the 80s, there was the killing of a Jewish student following a rebellion that occurred by people in Crown Heights after the killing with a car of a 7-year-old child by the name of Angela Cato, and the injuries.
Oh, Gavin Cato.
Gavin Cato. Well, his cousin was killed. Gavin, right? And his cousin was severely injured. This student, this Yankel Rosenbaum, was an Israeli student, and he subsequently was killed. And a young African-American man by the name of Limerick Nelson was charged with his murder. And he was successfully defended at the initial trial. But his family was not satisfied with the fact that he was exonerated. With the help of a local congressman at the time, who is now a senator, Charles Schumer, they got the Justice Department to initiate civil rights charges. And Limerick Nelson was subsequently found guilty and spent considerable time in jail. But it was only after the Rosenbaum family got justice for their child did they then initiate a lawsuit against the city of New York, which they recovered $1 million. So the point I'm making is, in both of these instances, justice was swift. In the case of Yankel Rosenbaum, it took a little while, but they secured justice before they secured compensation, which is what Malcolm said. Justice before compensation. But in every case, starting with Trayvon Martin, in every one, The template has been the same. Go for the money. Go for the money. Go for the money. Justice was never on their plate. And so at this point, we have to figure out just how much longer do you go for the money? Because going for the money has not bankrupted not one city. Not one. They have a war chest, and that is a war chest for them. They have a war chest that they have designated with considerable amounts of money that they are just willing to pay out. And so as a people, we have now been reduced to putting a price on the heads of our loved ones. Never in history have we been reduced to such depravity, which means there is something wrong with us and our minds.
No question about that, and we've been talking about that on this program. What, in your considerable arsenal of thoughts, do you think is a reasonable and workable antidote?
Well, as you know, the first thing for me is just making is the destruction of the political system here in this country. Now, I listened to you yesterday, and I absolutely agree. Only because we are wedded with the Democratic Party, just destroy them. Just wipe them off the face of the earth. Because you know, they have been the architect of our destruction. And yet still, when I share with individuals why this is necessary, now the retort that I get is, I agree with you, however, two words, Supreme Court. And so I ask them to explain, what relevance does that have for us? And their response is that because of the aging jurists on the Supreme Court, that the next president, if it's a Republican, that they will be able to replace at least two and probably three jurists, and that our children and our grandchildren will have to live with the effects of these jurists for the next 30 and 40 years. And I said, so what? So what? What difference will that make to you and your everyday existence? So what must occur is what Stephen Biko said, we're fighting for the salvation of black people's minds. And that's our charge in 2016, that we must fight and struggle for their minds.
You couldn't have been more eloquent, and you couldn't have been more relevant, and you couldn't have been more strategically placed to start this program today. And I thank you so much for doing just that. Thank you so much for your call today, Patricia. A lot to think about. From New York, Jay, you're also on the air.
Hello, please. How are you?
Fine, thank you. How are you?
I'm good. I'm just basically calling in regards to this absolute farce that's going on with Bill Cosby. This is absolutely mind-boggling, sick, and nothing but to get us off of what's really happening to our people in regards to Tamir Rice and all of the other killings that have happened over this last year. Now, let's be very, very clear. There are going to be a lot of people who are going to come out and say, oh, Bill is guilty. Bill must have done something. All of these things. But the reality is this, and let's be very clear on this, and something the media will never deal with nor address. This was an incident that happened 12 years ago, and there is absolutely, listen to the word, absolutely no evidence whatsoever to bring into court to say that this man committed this crime. No DNA evidence.
Let us, Jay, provide some context here. Bill Cosby today was charged with drugging and sexually assaulting a woman in his home 12 years ago. And as you know, this had been part of a burgeoning group of people and a burgeoning group of cases against him, suggesting the same modus operandi. But it is the first time out of all of these complaints that have emerged against him, that charges have actually been brought. So he is, as of today, facing a charge of sexual contact, aggravated indecent assault, and it is punishable, if convicted, by 5 years to 10 years behind bars and a $25,000 fine. It's a felony now. So this is the first time that he has officially been charged from this group, this latest group of complaints against him. And the announcement by the Montgomery County District Attorney comes just a matter of days before the statute of limitations was due to run out. Okay, so that's the context here. Now, what is your particular view and what is the significance of this case to you?
To me, my view is that there is absolutely no evidence that could be brought into court to convict this man. There is no physical evidence at all. There is no DNA evidence. This is basically her word against his word, and she's even made statements in the past that she is not sure if she was sexually attacked or not.
Well, here's the thing. How do you know that there's no evidence against Bill Cosby?
Because the evidence that would have to be brought into court would be a rape kit, DNA, drug analysis, and maybe some other things. I'm not a lawyer, but Alton would definitely be able to tell you. And from what I've heard and what I've observed over this period of time, there is none of that. Even in her lawsuit against him that was settled out of court, there was no evidence presented of these things other than a verbal accusation.
Now, you just hit upon a very critical question, but you kind of zipped over it. Could you tell what it is you just hinted at but didn't quite stop there long enough to let us know what the significance of this case is?
Well, the significance, I would say, is that there was a lawsuit brought by this woman against Bill Cosby, and the lawsuit was settled. But from my understanding,
correct. Now, just stop there for 1 second. That is a huge, huge issue here. Now tell us
why. But there's a flip side to it. The reason why you would say that it is a huge issue here is because he settled the lawsuit. But the thing is this. I don't think, I'm not sure, I may be wrong, but that information cannot be used in court because there was some sort of confidentiality agreement that the woman could not speak about that.
So one of the terms, it is reasonable to assume that in a case that has been settled, one of the things that would have occurred in that case would be that the person bringing the complaint will agree not to pursue charges against the person,
right,
and may even, I don't know the terms of the settlement, I haven't seen a document that spells out the terms, but it is reasonable to assume that she agreed not only that she will not pursue charges against him, but also that it may not have happened at all.
So now
I'm going to ask you, because you're going to be our teacher today, what therefore is the crux of the matter as you have raised it? What is the interesting dynamic here?
Well, I think the interesting dynamic is the fact that the DA may be trying to make a name for himself. And I also think that it's being used to take us away from all of these other things that are going on within this United States regarding the attack on people of color. I think this is nothing more than a smokescreen. That's what I think. I think it's just a tool being used by the state to take us off course, as you always say, to not look at all of the other things that are going on that we should be focusing on. So now, you know, they're going to hit us with this, and now we're going to focus on this Bill Cosby situation, not understanding that it's like a snowball chance in hell that this man will be convicted. You know what I mean?
Because what do you say, Jay, about this question? That whether the individual involved presses charges or doesn't press charges, the state has an obligation to do justice here, irrespective of the personal wishes of the individual involved, the woman bringing the charges, so that the state, in pursuing the prosecution of Bill Cosby, is simply doing the right thing of trying to find out the truth. Did a crime occur here, and was he the person who committed a crime? And if so, why should he not be pursued and charged?
Well, I think what you're trying to lead this to, Sister Utrecht, is that same analysis that you just put forward should be used in regards to Brother Rice and all of these other cases that the prosecution does not decide to bring to court. I think that's what you're trying to show, that you know, we need to take the same focus, just like they're focusing on Cosby, to focus on making the prosecution do the same thing in regards to these cases that they will not bring the trial.
Now, I would ask you another case. Cases that we've discussed right here on this program. Can you think of a parallel situation? Give us an interesting comparison. Compare and contrast, the way they used to ask you to do in high school, okay? Compare and contrast this case as it is developing with a case I hope you may recall quite clearly. And do you see an interesting difference here? What case might I be referring to?
I'm not sure, but maybe I would think Tamir Rice.
Okay, I would suggest the Tawana Brawley case.
Tawana Brawley.
Here's a case in which the individual involved, Tawana Brawley, who was a teenager at the time, 15 years old, did say what happened to her, did identify people, several men, six of them, who were involved in her abduction and repeated rape over several days, did name people, did have a rape kit done, did have all these things that would have basically been the basis of a prosecution, and it never happened.
But Utrecht, can I ask you a quick question about that? Because
sure.
I was
Go
never
ahead.
Really clear on that. In the rape kit that Tawana had done, was there ever any DNA evidence that connected those six men with her at that time? Because that's never been clear.
The principal person here was Stephen Pagonis, who was an assistant district attorney in Dutchess County at the time, well connected to the Democratic Party through his father. And here's the thing. The rape kit was administered, but Stephen Pagonis had dispatched himself. He had dispatched someone else who was an arson investigator with the county to go and collect it from the hospital. Then the rape kit just disappeared. It never reached the FBI. It never reached any lab that we know of. Nobody seems to know what happened to that rape kit. So you see,
now
it's an interesting dichotomy here.
Yes.
And I'm not suggesting for a minute that Bill Cosby is innocent or guilty. I'm taking the position that let's see what the evidence suggests and bring this thing to trial if it warrants it.
But there is no evidence as far as
I'm
concerned.
The thing is, we don't
evidence?
Know. We don't know what evidence might exist. We just don't know. But on the basis of what is being reported, we can clearly see a dichotomy in the way the system chooses to respond in one instance and chooses to respond in another instance. And it's a very interesting comparison, I would say. But I thank you for being our teacher today and bringing this to our attention. Thank you so much, Jay, for your call. New York is still prevailing. I don't know what's happening with the rest of the country. The rest of the country, I don't know. New York is winning today. 888-874-4888. We'll take this little break. We'll hear some more parang music, and we come back to your calls at 888-874-4888. You're listening to Lead Stories on PRN.FM. The reason I play these different kinds of music is to really prove a point that it reminds us that we have more in common than we think. And if we understand the beauty of music, you see how in so many ways that statement is made over and over and over again. There's more that unites us than divides us. But I happen to love this kind of music. Edward from Queens is on the air. Hello, Edward.
Yeah, how are you doing, Yatrice? Happy holidays to you.
Thank you, and the same to you.
Thank you. No, I was listening earlier, and one of your callers commented on the Tamir Rice and the fact of monetary compensation. They were basically referring to the Crown Heights affair that took place in the 90s. And I just wanted to put my two cents in as far as monetary compensation. Is most of the time when you're dealing with an African-American being killed by the police is the only type of compensation that these families can get. It isn't so much that they're looking for money. It's just that you're not going to get any justice. I mean, with Tamir Rice, with Staten Island, the brother out in Staten Island, with the other brother in Chicago, These prosecutors are not bringing proper cases to the grand juries to make a decision, to even begin to have the process of adjudication. You understand what I'm saying?
I understand.
So, a lot of times, this is the only compensation these families can get.
Well, you have a point. You have a point, but then I will offer something to counter it, and it's this. There is a choice to be made. And the community needs to insist on it. And the choice is, and I agree with you, very often, I mean, I don't discount the appropriateness of compensation. The law provides for that when a family should be appropriately compensated for the loss of a loved one, especially under these kinds of circumstances. The point of contention, Edward, is this. When these cases occur, the lawyers representing these families have a strategic opportunity to score points in the interest of justice. And insofar as the community as a whole is being mobilized in support of the family and to make a point of protest about these police killings, insofar as the community and the community's energy and the community's resources, all these things are put on the table in the interest of justice, it is imperative that the attorneys advising the family also put on the table the need to follow through, because that is the contribution that the family could make. I don't want to sound crude, but the death has already occurred. The death has already occurred. So the question here now is, are we interested in justice or not? Now, what does that require? It requires, number one, a public statement and demonstrable proof that you are interested in fighting the system. Now, I'm aware that you can't tell people what to do. It ultimately is a decision of the family and survivors how they choose to proceed with these kinds of cases. But if, in fact, the issue is justice, then we will be talking about the appointment immediately, confronting the state and talking about the appointment of a special prosecutor, no negotiations. Then we will be talking about somebody going to jail, no negotiations. Then we will be talking about swift and certain punishment, no negotiations. Then we will be talking about the rights of individuals to prevail over this business about money and how much money the city is willing to settle for. Because if the issue is justice, that's what has to happen. Now, the families and the attorneys who are advising them clearly could make the decision that they'll deal with the settlement. But understand, we just finished talking about settlements and terms of settlements. One of the terms of settlements will always be that the family will now have to hold the city harmless. The family will have to agree not to prosecute or not to insist that charges be filed. The family will have to say that the city wasn't guilty.
When you bring a civil case, there's a fundamental difference between a civil case and a criminal case. What I'm saying is 90% of the time, the criminal case is decided by the district attorney's office and how they present this case to the grand jury. You know the old saying, a DA can indict a ham sandwich. Because it's just the DA and 30 people, and the DA presents a preponderance of evidence, paints a story which gives the grand jury people, the 30 people or so in New York, I know specifically, the opportunity to say, well, maybe there was some wrongdoing in this. We're not deciding guilt or innocence, but this requires further investigation. This requires further scrutiny. And it's obvious to me, I was involved specifically with the Sean Bell case out here in Queens, and it's obvious to me that it's not presented in that way. And I'm not saying that the families always want justice. I mean, I can only speak from my personal experience involved in protests and involved specifically with the Sean Bell incident. Their family wanted justice. The money did not help anybody as far as the feeling of justice in the immediate family or those involved. It didn't satisfy me. It didn't satisfy anybody. I'm just saying the city has to be made to pay something. But what needs to happen is independent prosecutor, yes. Civilian complaint review board with real teeth with the power to indict, yes. And I honestly believe that the police commissioner, should be an electoral office. It shouldn't be appointment by the mayor. It should be elected. It should be electoral office. And there should be residency laws for these police. But until the African-American community presents a unified front and there is some type of consequences for these officers, we're never going to see that. And compensation is sometimes, it's not the best thing, it's not the moral thing, but it's the only thing that these families can get.
But it has also been, and your points are well taken and well made, by the way. The issue I'm raising, though, is that the cases, from a legal strategy point of view, have been going down the same path. And that is, the first indication that the city is willing to settle, that's where the lawyers go. And in many of these cases, I'm telling you for a fact, I've asked in many cases, what legal papers have you filed to indicate that you're interested in justice here? What motions have you filed? Let's see what the record says. Let's see your files. Let's see what you asked, how you confronted the state, how you demanded a special prosecutor, even before this case goes to the so-called grand jury, where you correctly pointed out that's where the fix gets in.
But that's where it has to go. You can't the issue of a special prosecutor or all of the other recommendations that I have made to you now and have made in protest, they are not part of the case. The actual case has to go through the district attorney's office. It has to go through the district attorney's office.
I side with Alton Maddox on this one. And what he says time and again, you do not follow the rules. You're in a position not to follow the rules, but to make a new path with these cases. There's no rule book that you have to now go through the same process that you know is corrupt. You stop it. These cases, when they occur, there's an opportunity, a very small window of time in which entirely different strategies, if applied, would yield different results. They did yield results in New York City in several cases where, again, with Alton Maddox's intervention representing the family, where a special prosecutor was appointed. But with big-time showdowns, almost fist fights breaking out in the governor's office and compelling him to do it. And those cases ended up yielding justice. But we have, I'm going to be frank about it, we have a timidity among the attorneys advising these families. And we have an unwillingness on the part of these attorneys to engage the system in the interest of justice, not just for the family, but for the entire class of people similarly situated. And that is a major point of contention with me in these cases, because what they are saying, in my view, is that they can use all of that energy, people demonstrating all over the country, simply to shore up the payout. And that's as far as they're willing to go. No, I want to see evidence that you have engaged the system on its own terms with a legal strategy that yields justice. And if they're not willing to do that, then they need to declare that up front so that people don't have to hit the streets and people don't have to take time out of their work day to go and protest thinking that they're contributing to justice. They're contributing to a payout, and that's not justice. It's part of compensation is part of what the family is owed, but it is not justice. That's important.
I totally agree with you in that aspect, but what I'm saying is you're talking about automatic. You're talking about an extraordinary individual as far as legal matters is concerned. A lot of these lawyers don't even know half of what he knows or how to implement it. And like you said, I got to agree with you. There is a timidity, an acceptance, a compliance with the system at large and trying to work within the system. But I'm still going to protest personally. I'm still going to go out there because eventually something has to give. Something has to give, because if it doesn't give, it's going to get worse before it gets any better, but we don't want it to get that much worse. So I don't begrudge anyone from what they're doing as far as fighting the system, but definitely there needs to be a change in attitude, a change in strategy, because like the old saying goes, to do the same thing and expect different results is insanity.
Absolutely. Thank you so much, Edward, for calling. I really appreciate it.
Bye-bye.
Ali, you're on the air. Thanks for calling.
Hi, Idris. How are you doing?
Fine, thank you. And how are you?
I'm doing well. I just wanted to say hello to everyone who's listening today. And I'm wishing everyone a very, very happy new year.
Thank you so much for that.
Okay. I wanted to combine something that Patricia has said, also Jay, and what you and Jay were talking about Bill Cosby. But before that, I wanted to say two things. One is about the music that you play from Trinidad. That music, when I heard, I thought it was this music called the music of the Jibaros in Puerto Rico.
Yes, and, like Bahanda.
I was like, wow, I couldn't believe it. And then when you said that was a Trinidadian music, I was like, wow, all of us, are we don't want to, but all of us are connected in one way or another. And I just wanted to say something to Harvey. My goodness, I love Harvey, even though every time that I called is it's a political issue. But Harvey bring us down to earth, you know, thinking about the environment and all that. And I just wanted to mention two things to him. One was that during the Occupy movement in Zuccotti, there used to be a bicycle where they used to create energy, electricity, and people, they used to go on the bike and create electricity. So that was a form of creating, you know, electricity, and that's what people did at Zuccotti. I just wanted to say that, and also I wanted to tell him that my husband, about 4 years ago, was working in a school in Queens where they used the roof of the school to grow food. And then the kids that grow the food, and then they sell the food on Friday to the community, the school community. So I just want to let him know, because he was talking about growing food on top of supermarket.
Yes.
So I wanted to tell him that some people, they have an idea, and here in Queens, I don't know if they're still doing it, that's what they were doing in one of the schools, using the roof to grow food. And I thought that was a good idea, what he was talking about. But going back to what Patricia said and what Jay said, one of the things that I'm a little confused about, the settlement that this woman had got from before, from her case before, how can she go to court and testify against him while she already had received money? And the most of this money is hush money that you, I guess, sign some kind of paper, some kind of statement that you won't be talking about what the settlement was and all this information. Because I just wanted to tell you this story. There was one of these parents that the kids got killed in the Bronx. And this, I don't want to say the name because I think it's unfair to put people out there without having all the facts. But this person used to do so many things for her child. But after getting this money, this hush money, we don't see her on any of the protests. We haven't seen her I haven't seen any email of what she's doing. She used to do so many things. We used to go to her neighborhood, which is very far from me, to protest, go to the prison, do this, do that. After that hush money, it's almost like she had disappeared. And it's the same thing with these people, Kwang, in Chicago. This family, the McDonald family, it was a journalist who actually took the city of Chicago to court to get this video. I haven't really heard from this family. And every time over and over, and this is what Patricia was talking about, that this family, they receive money. We don't hear from them. And then you see the people out there protesting, marching, and I'm one of them. But then it's like, it's dead. Especially with Eric Garner, it's the same thing. You don't see the family. The only person that we saw the day that the year anniversary that we went to Staten Island was a woman who had that baby with him. She was with us. But other than that, you don't see the other family. And this is over and over. So I'm going back to the Bales case. How can this woman who already had received that money, I don't know, 12 years ago, 15, whatever it was, can come back to court to testify against him?
Well, this is something we'll be exploring because that raises a question about what pressures might have been brought against her to compel her to cooperate, considering that she had come to terms, which is what a settlement is, she had come to terms with Bill Cosby. And certainly, I imagine she had lawyers who okayed whatever the settlement was, and it was done to mutual agreement, which is what a settlement is. Now, it may very well be the case that other interested parties who want to make points about, say, women's rights, or who want to make points against Bill Cosby on the issue of sexual harassment, or who just want to make points, period. Like the district attorney wanting to make points about how conscientious he is about prosecuting these cases, may have tried and succeeded in making a criminal case. I don't know what the evidence is, whether there's great evidence, I don't know. But it seems to me that this is a very important legal question, and we'll be talking about it. There's no question about it.
Okay. Thank you very much, and Happy New Year to everyone.
Thank you so much. From Chicago, Henry, you're on the air.
Hey, Therese, how's it going?
Good. How is it going in Chicago?
Oh, it's going. It's going. Today there's more protests going at one of the basic police stations that housed the officer that killed the 55-year-old woman and the 20-year-old student that visited that got killed last week. So there's more protests going on, but I wanted to bring this up in regards to that because this year we saw a lot of moments that prompted a lot of grassroots movements, to rise up, and not just in Chicago, but, across the country, because we've had, many public police killings going on, within our community. Mm-hmm. But I wanted to, going into 2016, and it's starting to happen here, one of the things that kills movements, and it's not disinterest, but agitators and agents, they basically kill, almost all the grassroots movements that go on. And you're starting to see it here in Chicago. One of the community organizers who organized some of the protests here, it basically said that there were, people who, and this is happening in Minnesota, I think, as well, where agitators would come in and start stuff that, the protesters would not be doing, like throwing stuff at the police or agitating the police in that particular manner. And then we also have what I call agents who basically infiltrate these movements, in order to break them down, because now you have fighting going on, or not fighting, but you have basically, back and forth going on between some of the grassroots community organizers. And I mean, this is going on in the media, local media here, on Facebook, and it's just like, I'm sitting here looking at this stuff, and it's like, come on now, can we at least get into next year before we start doing this? Because I understand people have different views and different opinions on a certain objective. However, we cannot sit here and argue about certain particulars just because we disagree on certain things. And going into next year, we need to identify these people, and we really need to deal with them in a way where they cannot derail these movements, because, you know, this has been the history, you know, of our movement and how they got derailed, because, you know, and even with agents, and I would say this, most of the agents aren't even official government agents. When I think of agents, I think of people who just basically derail it because of the fact that they just want to derail it, you know, and they don't want to, you know, be part of a movement that might make changes, you know, within our community and with our country. So we need to be very careful of these people, and we need to identify them, because they come in all shapes and sizes within our communities, and sometimes they can be the leaders. So we need to really be careful of this.
Most definitely.
And I have a story. There's an elder at my church who used to work with the Black Panther. And she mentioned to me that a longtime friend of hers had just recently, she said, I think about 3 years ago, had told her that she was spying on her while she was in the Panthers. And she said this just happened 3 years ago, when she admitted that she was spying on her because of the fact that she was a good friend of hers. So it's something that we have to definitely be careful of.
Well, thank you for that. And you can't believe how appropriate that observation is, because in all movements you'll find that element. In all organizations you'll find that element. People who, for whatever reason, are serving to undermine or completely destroy and dismantle movements that have very noble objectives and very high ideals. But you will find people who are in the midst of it all, working a whole different program, a whole different agenda. Absolutely. Mm-hmm. Thank you so much for calling, Henry.
Thank you.
That brings us to the end of our program today. Thank you all for contributing such incredible thoughts and ideas and opinions for our consideration. This is, I think, the best peer education session anywhere on the planet in radio. I thank you for that, and for honoring that very thing of offering the best of yourselves and to keep the conversation at a pretty high level. I'm very proud about that. Coming up next, the NDC Savings Club, and you can reach me at leadstories@gmail.com. As always, a pleasure and a great privilege to be in your company. We'll see each other tomorrow. Bye-bye.